Greetings, friends. Today's talk is on karma and rebirth. Both topics are quite misunderstood in modern Buddhism, and they're often dismissed in importance. And they're really key teachings that you can truly say that the living the Dhamma and having developed the Dhamma moment by moment directly relates to karma, and it actually relates to rebirth. I'm going to focus more on karma today, but I will touch a little bit on the useful meaning of rebirth. So karma was a spiritual concept during the time of the Buddha, but the Buddha understood it differently. So he used the word karma simply because it was a commonly used word, but he used it in an entirely different way. And I won't get into the history of the karma or where it came from or where the concept originated in. But again, just to reiterate that the Buddha used the term because it was common, but he used it in a way to describe the difference between what he taught and the common usage of karma. So karma is the present moment unfolding of past intentional actions, unfolding in this present moment, but moderated by the present level of our mindfulness. And why that's important to understand is that any unfolding of our karma can be moderated, and the direction of that karma, how it unfolds, can be changed by what we're holding in mind in this present moment. One of the biggest misunderstandings about karma is that there is a one-to-one relationship. In other words, whatever you've done in the past, you will have to experience exactly that same thing. In other words, if you hurt somebody by violence, by using a gun, at some point in the future, you're going to have to be shot by a gun. And the other side of that is that every single kindness will likely result in will definitely result in a future kindness towards you. Both of those things are just not true. They contradict directly the Buddhist teachings on impermanence, but most importantly, the Buddhist teachings on what we hold in mind will determine our experience. The best example of that that I've ever come across is the Buddha's encounter with a murderer whose name was Angulimala. Angulimala was this bloodthirsty, crazy person who was so enamored with killing that every one of his victims, he cut off their fingers and he made a necklace out of their fingers, and he wore this necklace constantly to scare people and show people what he was about. And so the sutta on Angulimala tells a story of Angulimala's coming down the roadway, and he's got 99 of these fingers hanging off his neck on his necklace, and he's eager for the 100th victim. And he spies the Buddha down the road coming towards him, and he decides that this guy's going to be number 100. And there's a long, drawn-out story that I won't get into the whole story about it, because it's really not all that important. But in the sutta, it tells that the Angulimala started quickening his pace, trying to catch up to the Buddha quicker. And the quicker he got, the Buddha's distance remained the same, and he could never quite catch up to the Buddha. The Buddha finally realized what was going on and wanted to try to help Angulimala. So he slowed his pace, and he allowed Angulimala to catch up to him. And the closer that Angulimala got to the Buddha, the more he was backing away. He felt the Buddha's countenance, and his desire to kill the Buddha was waning. And he finally caught up to the Buddha where they could have a conversation. And again, I don't want to get too much into this sutta, but the Buddha saw the troubled mind. He was able to, of course, easily pick up that Angulimala was deeply troubled in his mind. And, of course, he understood the nature of suffering and deluded thinking, and so he could speak directly to that, in which he did. And he briefly explained to Angulimala what his problem was. He explained also the solution to his problem. And in that encounter, Angela Miller's mind cleared. He awakened, and he actually became one of the monks in the Buddha Sangha. And the point of that in relation to karma is that the modern belief in karma, and even the belief prevalent during the Buddhist time, was, well, Angela Miller has killed 99 people, and so he's going to have to be murdered 99 times in order to so-called balance the scale. And that's simply not true. Upon Angela Miller's awakening, his mind that was so troubled and constantly troubled by the constant violence that was in his mind and always looking to express that violence came to cessation. And the point of that is that the Angela Miller up till that point was creating the conditions of his own suffering by his actions and by what he was holding in mind. When he awakened and he no longer held in mind that violence and that competitiveness and that disturbed thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, there was nothing else to unfold. There was no reason in a dhammic sense for him to suffer any other kind of pain and suffering. That's just not necessary. So it is told that Angela Miller awakened. He became a monk in the Buddha Sangha. He never hurt another individual again. And so, getting back to my description of karma, the present moment unfolding of Angela Miller's karma was to hurt the Buddha, to make another victim of the Buddha. But as his mind cleared, that present moment mindfulness erased all of his past karma and allowed him to live in peace and happiness for the rest of his life and everyone else, including who might have been Angela Miller's victims and were no longer, simply by encountering the Dharma. The Dhamma, I'm sorry, I don't mean to misapply those two terms. One other example of this is, and it's a famous one, about 300 years after the Buddha's passing, King Ashoka, who was a very powerful king in northern India, controlled most of northern India at the time. It was a brutal and bloodthirsty leader. He left bloody victims all over northern India, and he was so enamored with his own bloodthirstiness that when he killed people, and this is probably where the term, they put his head on his pike, when he killed people, he would mount their heads on pikes, and all over northern India there were these great battlefields of heads hanging on these pikes. It's just an awful scene. King Ashoka came across the Buddha's teaching, took to it immediately, and awakened, and never harmed another person. In fact, he became one of the most peaceful leaders in history, so much so that he's the first person and that we know historically that started universal health care, something that's quite topical today. He started universal health care for all of the people within his kingdom, under his control and under his protection. And he went even further than that. He was the first person who started free veterinary care for animals. He changed his thinking so much that it immediately changed the direction of his karma and what the result of that karma would be. In other words, he awakened. His present moment mindfulness changed all of the effects of his past violent deeds, and he lived in peace and happiness for the rest of his life, and the people around him obviously did. So that's the important point of karma. It's not something, it's not part of some vague universal spiritual system that's here to punish us for everything we've ever done. Again, just to reiterate, karma is the present moment unfolding of our past intentional actions moderated by the level of our mindfulness. Excuse my dog's having a drink. And so if our mindfulness is inclined towards awakening, framed by the Eightfold Path, rooted in consciousness, rooted in the concentration that's developed in Shamatha Vipassana meditation, and inclined towards awakening, then our karma itself is inclined towards awakening. We're working out the effects of our ignorance of Four Noble Truths in this moment. If our mindfulness is still rooted in that ignorance, our karma can only generate more results of that ignorance, meaning the Buddha's description of that. It is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that all manner of suffering arises. So that if we are continuing our ignorance of Four Noble Truths, our karma will only be moment by moment manifestation of that ignorance. And this is where the important teachings on mindfulness are really to be applied. The Buddha taught mindfulness in two specific applications. One is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which is primarily used in meditation. And then in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Sutta on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, at the end of that sutta, the Buddha then takes that developed mindfulness and shows that we should apply that mindfulness to each factor of the Eightfold Path. And I won't get into that talk today, but that will be coming up. But briefly, the Buddha says to be mindful of, for example, right view, or wrong view, and enter and remain in right view, and throughout the other seven factors of the Eightfold Path, to be mindful of being outside of the framework of the Eightfold Path, and bring your mindfulness, hold in mind the eight factors of the Eightfold Path. And that is how we develop present moment mindfulness that affects whatever past karma we are giving birth to in this moment. And that leads to the second half of this talk. The Buddha never taught reincarnation in a way that was directly related to karma. In other words, that whatever karma we've generated in this life is going to determine the details of a future life. And he also is very clear that there's not a continuation of an individual soul from life to life. But he did not say that there's no such thing as rebirth. But he was very clear in relation to that rebirth that we can alter the conditions of our rebirth by what we're holding in mind in this present moment. And that leads to a much more important interpretation of rebirth. Each moment holds a potential to give birth to another moment that's rooted in ignorance, or to give birth to another moment that's rooted in mindfulness of the Eightfold Path. And if it is rooted in ignorance, we can only give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance. And if that this present moment we are developing the Eightfold Path and holding in mind the eight factors of the Eightfold Path as the framework for how we're living our life, then we are giving birth to a moment that is inclined towards awakening. And those moments build within the karma of our own life towards awakening. And as long as we maintain that direction, that mindfulness of the Eightfold Path, we are continuing to incline our minds towards awakening, and we will awaken. And often that will occur in this present lifetime. The reason why I say that in this context, another great misunderstanding in modern Buddhism, is that it takes infinite lifetimes. It's often portrayed that way, eons and eons, to awaken. And of course, that's not anything that the Buddha taught. The Buddha taught his Dhamma so that we could awaken in this lifetime, or very quickly, and that's mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta. But the most important thing to remember about that, and it brings immediacy to our Dhamma practice, is that understanding that, yes, we can awaken in this present lifetime depending on the present level of our mindfulness, what we're holding in mind. And if we're holding in mind the factors of the Eightfold Path and using that as our framework for living our life, if we're living well integrated with the Eightfold Path, another word of using that is a holy life, holistically engaged in the Eightfold Path, then we can and will awaken in this lifetime. It's only a matter of being mindful of what we're giving birth to in the next moment, and losing any concern of what we might be giving birth to in future lifetimes, because that we really don't have. I was going to say we really don't have control over. We certainly have control over it, but what's most important is what we have control over in this present lifetime. And what we have control over in this present lifetime, the only thing that we really should be concerned about is awakening. Because that is the potential that is present in each moment. It's what karma relates to. One of the best ways of understanding what our karma is to simply, to use a phrase, to look in the mirror, to take a good look at our life. And if our life is rooted in confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering rooted in ignorance, we know for sure that that is what our karma is going to be as our life progresses. And if we look at our life and we can sincerely say that we are developing the principles and the practice that are rooted in the Eightfold Path, then we can truly know that our karma is geared towards and is providing the direction even towards awakening in this present lifetime, and more importantly, in this present moment. And that's the importance of karma and rebirth. And that's the end of our talk today. I see that there's one viewer. I know I keep saying this, that I'm going to start having a chat possible on this. The platforms out there just aren't working well. And what I'm going to be adding soon is a chat platform directly on my website so that we can interact after these talks on Wednesday. But if you have an email, if you'd like to send me an email about this talk, I'll certainly get back to you as soon as possible. And thank you for joining today. Peace.
Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.